The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Matt Wells. Welcome back to Media Talk. Coming up this week, 2 years in the making, but just 2 hours of debate. We pick apart the scandal of the digital economy bill. Also in the podcast...
Any playground you went into in the UK, and particularly in Ireland, where it was massive, it was the only site that mattered.
Bebo gets the bullet as AOL declares it'll shut down or sell up its failing social network site. Where did it all go wrong? Plus...
They're going to stop people like Google, or Microsoft, or whoever... taking our stories for nothing.
Going gaga over Google again, we ask whether Rupert Murdoch's finally lost it as he vents further spleen over the internet and declares the iPad as the saviour of newspapers. And...
There's one thing you never put in a trap if you're smart, if you value your continued existence, if you have any plans about seeing tomorrow, there's one thing you never, ever put in a trap.
Me.
Our verdict on Matt Smith as the new Doctor Who. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, this week, the powers that be at Mattel decided to allow players to use proper nouns in Scrabble, shock horror, which means that our two panellists score a highly respectable 20 and 24 points each. Maggie Brown is a Media Guardian columnist. Maggie, you're back from your Easter retreat in Wales, where I'm assuming that Scrabble features highly.
Well, actually, I went to the races and I lost lots of money and I was so grumpy afterwards. I don't think I felt like
you
playing a board game.
Fluttering it away on the horses. I don't believe
the house
you.
I
Maggie
got was second. It was very annoying.
That's not good, no. Well, also here today, we have Steve Ackerman, who I'm sure isn't a betting... Are you a betting man, Steve Ackerman?
Not particularly.
No, who's the managing director of the radio and digital content company Something Else, producers of Gardener's Quest in Time on Radio 4, and now Ronnie Wood on Absolute Radio.
Indeed.
Which is the more rock and roll?
Definitely Ronnie Wood. We even had Paps outside the building yesterday.
You had Paps outside?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. Good stuff. Well, we'll get on to other radio matters later on, not least the shortlist for the 2010 Sony Awards. But our first port of call this week is Westminster.
We took a decision to support this bill in principle. We've said that we would love to have scrutinised the clauses that are being debated now. We would have loved to have tabled amendments and have them debated in this House. But we supported this bill in principle. We support the principle that something should be done to combat illegal file sharing. And in fact, every
the government forced through the controversial digital economy bill after just 2 hours of debate in the House of Commons. It is a watered-down version of the original legislation, but still, the 76-page bill is a wide-ranging piece of media and technology reform. It encompasses everything from illegal downloads to the role of Ofcom to digital switchover for radio. Tom Watson is the Labour MP for West Bromwich East and a former government minister. He's been very vocal about his opposition to the bill. We can speak to him now. Tom, you voted against the government last night. You're a former government whip. That must have gone against your nature quite strongly. Why did you do it?
It did, and it hurts to do it, and it's very upsetting. But I feel very strongly about digital policy, and strongly support internet freedoms, and what I thought the digital economy bill was a missed opportunity. What we really need in the UK is wholesale copyright reform for the digital age. And essentially what we were doing with this bill is helping old publishing interests manage the politics of decline. And I don't think that's where government should be in this space.
And it felt, having watched the debate, it felt that this was everything that was bad about our parliamentary system, a complex and complicated bill, which has been years in the planning, very controversial, felt to many people like, you know, it wasn't in any way, shape or form ready to be enacted into law, rammed through in 2 hours.
Yeah, well, that's how it felt to me. And many thousands of people who were watching the debate and in various media. So, I mean, the two things I always say about legislation, you should never do it in haste. And when the political parties agree on something, there's no proper scrutiny taking place. So, you know, I was really concerned that it didn't have the proper scrutiny it deserved.
Tom Watson there. Maggie Brown, you have something to say about this, don't you? I mean, it was a terribly bad piece of, as Tom Watson was saying, a really bad piece of parliamentary discussion and legislation.
I think the whole thing has been really badly handled. I'm entirely pleased in some ways that parts of it have met a sticky end, because I think that the way that some of the proposals were brought forward, for example, the £6 annual tax on landlines for every household, these things were done in an almost sneaky manner, that despite all of the discussion and debate that people threw themselves into for the best part of 6 or 9 months last year.
The Digital Britain sort of...
The Digital Britain extravaganza. That £6 tax was never openly debated. It just suddenly appeared in the white paper. And I'm not at all surprised that measure in particular has not found cross-party support. The kind of news pilots that people actually competed for, these were, again...
This is the ITV regional news
replacements. Yes, yeah. Which didn't actually require, I think, the bill to go through, but nonetheless were part of it. These were discussions that were being held right up against the line on something which is actually really significant, giving public money to... funding news programmes, and these are things which need a much calmer atmosphere in which to be debated. And you know, we've got this whole protection of copyright power which looks very loosely drawn, and all of this, I would imagine, has got to be revisited after the election, and in, I hope, a calmer atmosphere.
This is the sort of bill that ought to have gone through detailed and expert pre-legislative scrutiny, which other communications bills, less complicated matters than this, it has to be said. The whole setting up of Ofcom went through
the 2003 Communications Act. I mean, it didn't actually prevent some unexpected outcomes, course. But it was indeed given a very thorough vetting under Lord Putnam, and that was a cross-party approach. This, in a sense, was a very big piece of legislation that was almost being enacted at the wrong time anyway, because we knew at some stage there had to be an election, and so that the whole process, when they tried to telescope it in the final stages, just really fell apart.
Okay, well, Mackie mentioned the election. Are you fired up for the election, Steve Ackham? There's acres of coverage already all over the place, on the television and the radio and the newspapers.
Well, one of my secret passions is politics, so I have to say, actually, at this sort of time, I absolutely love it. I can't. I'm one of those boring people who can't get enough of it.
Have you been playing with swingometers?
I haven't yet, but I was looking at the Guardian website yesterday at some of the tools. So yes.
I mean, other swingometers are available, but ours ours is the only one.
Your swing's bigger.
Our swing.
This is a fantastic opportunity for the Guardian, isn't it? What? To be honest, because it's quite probable we are going to get rid of Gordon Brown. And The Guardian is wonderfully positioned if we do have either a hung parliament or a small Conservative, whatever we have, or a change of leader. I mean, we're almost a perfectly placed media, newspaper, brand, whatever we want to call ourselves.
What I was going to say was ours is the only one that swings three ways at once.
but there you are.
Absolutely. And a declaration of interest. I'm running our online election coverage. But I'm liking the Sky News website. The Sky News Election Interactive gives the result graphically represented of every election back to something like 1835.
Incredible. But
I think that's less interesting than being able to... Where I hope and think online this time around will be really interesting is either super local issues, so being able to see the sort of pattern of behaviour in your local area or your region, and also over national issues. So as an example, I had a look yesterday at Five Live, and online they've got a word...
This audio cloud thing.
They've got a word cloud. They've got a word cloud and audio... Well, it's a word cloud which has obviously in different sizes the words of key issues, and if you click on the word, it then takes you through to the audio clips that have been heard on the station in relation to that issue. So you can then see, you know, the four or five key interviews. And I think it's those sorts of things that are going to allow people to delve into the election in a much richer way, though I'm sceptical about how much of an online election it's really going to be compared to what we saw in the States last year.
Newsnight has got the best gimmicks, I think. They've got their reporter, Stephen Smith, he's motorway man, so they've got him staying at a motorway service station for the duration of the election.
Lucky him.
Yeah, very good. We'll talk about the debate. We've talked about the debates before, and we'll talk about the debates again when they've happened, so let's not get into that now. Just a plug for our election coverage. It's all at guardian.co.uk/election2010. We'll stick with digital for just a few more moments, turning to Bebo, once one of the most popular social networking sites on the web. The parent company AOL, which bought the site for almost $1 billion in 2008 from its British founders, says that competition from the likes of MySpace and Facebook means the business is no longer viable, if it ever was. It's now looking for a new buyer, or it'll shut the service down completely. Bebo's user figures dropped from nearly 40 million a month to just 12 million last February, while at the last count, Facebook claimed 400 million active users around the world. Where did it all go wrong? Media Talk producer Ben Green caught up with The Guardian's digital guru Jemima Kish to find out.
Money, essentially. AOL paid a full whack for Bebo right at the top of the social networking boom. So it was 850 million and it was in cash as well. People said that was pretty ouchy even at the time, and now it looks like it was quite ridiculous, really. The problem was that AOL didn't give Bebo the funding it needed. It had been a startup until AOL bought it, and they'd always winged it, basically. They needed a huge cash injection. Firstly, well, mostly for engineers, actually. They needed enough engineers to keep the site running properly, and then they need all the extra engineers to do all the amazing fancy stuff that comes after that. And they didn't have either of that. I think there was one point where Bebo had 40 engineers and Facebook had 2,000. And that's the difference, really, and that is where Facebook has succeeded not just against Bebo but against virtually every social networking competitor in many, many markets around the world.
So who uses Bebo?
It is really a kids' thing. It was really, really popular with younger teenagers, sort of 13 to 16-year-olds. And there was a time when any playground you went into in the UK, and particularly in Ireland, where it was massive, it was the only site that mattered. And that was also before the days when Facebook had opened its doors beyond the US university network.
So Bebo's fallen way out of favour. MySpace used to be very cool. Is there a possibility that Mr. Murdoch's favourite social networking site might fall the way of Bebo too?
I think most people are in general agreement that MySpace's days have passed. I think that's the nicest possible way that I can put that. Again, it comes down not so much to what they've done wrong, although there are very many things they've done wrong. It comes down to technology, and that's where Facebook has the edge every time. And there are key things that Facebook has done that have made it very successful. One of them is open up a kind of back door to their site, if you like, through things like Facebook Connect, which enables them to link to lots of other networks around the world, which encourages growth. The other biggie is their apps system. So external developers and external companies can all build apps that go onto Facebook. Now, the other two have done this, but they haven't done it in as sophisticated a way as Facebook did. And again, that comes down to resources, and it comes down to money, and it comes down to Facebook hiring some really, really good developer talent.
So, Bebo, it's up for sale, or it might just be shut down now. Is there any benefit in another tech company buying it and inheriting the 12, 13 million users, or is someone better off starting from scratch?
It's really unlikely that anyone's going to buy it. Aside from anything else, it costs quite a lot to run that site because it still has enough users with enough video and all the rest on there that the running costs are quite high. Is there a real strategic advantage for somebody in buying that site? I'm not sure there is.
Jemima Kish there. Mackie Brown, you have children. Do they use Bebo?
No, I have four children. They don't. They're all very Facebook oriented. In particular, of course, one of my daughters lives in America, and they use it to keep in touch with their friends.
Are you on it, Maggie?
Of course not. I belong to the lace curtain generation. I mean, I like to have a certain degree of privacy. I'm on LinkedIn, and that's about as far
as you're on LinkedIn. You see, I never understand LinkedIn. Are you on? I always get lots of invites to LinkedIn.
Well, I mean, it's of minor interest. You have people sort of slightly boasting about what they're doing next. Not me, of course.
No. What are you on? You're on Facebook, aren't you?
I am on Facebook, and I am on LinkedIn.
Yeah. So. What do you get from LinkedIn? New jobs?
No, LinkedIn actually is fairly handy, particularly if you're in a bit of a sales role, you know, where you're trying to go out and speak to different people. It's a pretty handy way of actually finding out names and job titles and who's in what company.
Right. Well, on Bebo, on the tech blog, one of the commenters wrote, Bebo is almost, I'm not sure I should read this out, Bebo is almost entirely populated by chavs and paedophiles. No wonder it's sinking. Facebook is a much safer and respectable platform. There we are. I was also going to say, with a straight face, if you've got anything to say on Bebo, why not post your feedback on the wall of our Facebook group? On to the press now, and who else but Rupert Murdoch again. The News Corporation chief has been on something of a world tour over the last month. He delivered the keynote speech at the Abu Dhabi Media Summit before popping into the News International offices in Wapping, where he finalised his plans for the Times Online paywall. And this week, he jetted back to Washington, D.C. to talk to America's National Press Club. Venerable CBS newsman Marvin Kalb interviewed Murdoch on stage at the George Washington University, and Murdoch was more forthright than ever in his mission to prevent Google taking his journalism for free.
They're going to stop people like Google or Microsoft or whoever taking our stories for nothing.
Be stopping what exactly?
Well, if you go to Google News and you see stories and it says Wall Street Journal, you tap on it and you suddenly get the page or the story as in the Wall Street Journal. And it's for free.
Right.
And they take it for nothing. And then they've got this very clever business model, which is, and they've invented almost a new type of advertising, search advertising. And so if they just pour out tens of millions of words a day, one way or another, they have keywords in there which tie to advertising beside it. And it's produced a river of gold. And I think they ought to stop it. The newspapers ought to stand up and let them do their own reporting or whatever.
It's an outrage, isn't it? You know what's so outrageous? It's really terrible that when people tap on a link, they come to your site. It's just, you know, I can't believe that. It's just shocking. Now, listen, if you think he sounded out of his depth there, just have a listen to what he said about the iPad.
You know, I got a glimpse of the future this last weekend with the Apple iPad. It is a wonderful thing. It's not all new invention, but it brought together all forms of media, music, books, newspapers, whatever. Mm. Now, you know, if there's going to be a transition to this over the long term, it'll have to be managed very, very carefully.
If there is to be that transition.
Yes, if you say, you know, well, it's the end of the tactile newspaper.
But is that what you think? I'm trying to get your judgment.
No, I don't know. I just don't know.
I mean, 10 or 20 years from
this
now.
This is going to be improved on by Apple. They'll have 8 or 9 competitors within 12 months in the electronic industry.
Right.
And there's going to be tens of millions of this sort of thing sold all over the world.
So what you're saying is that is, in effect, your vision of the future of newspapers. And what I'm trying to understand is,
I think it's a possibility, which I have to provide for. And it may be the saving of newspapers, because it'll be...
How the saving?
Well, you don't have the costs of paper, ink, printing,
trucks. But that's the end of the newspaper that you pick up.
That's when you come to the end of the road, yes.
Rupert Murdoch there, but I bet he's not on Bebo.
Can I just ask, if you don't have a news... If you have a...
Yes,
if you don't have paper, print... Yes. Isn't that called a website?
Yes, I knew. I was just about to say that. This is just... Actually, listening to that, reading the reports of that speech was, you know, my final moment of clarity about Murdoch. He knows nothing. He knows absolutely nothing. He has not got a clue. The idea that Rupert Murdoch is, that we should somehow laud him as the guru of all things newspapers and what he says goes. I have seen the iPad. I have touched it and felt it, and because we have one in the office, because we launched this new iPad app in America, which is very nice. And it is not, I can tell you, the future of newspapers. It may be many things. It's a beautiful way of displaying photographs, which is why we've done a photograph app. It's quite a nice way of reading books, but it's a terrible way of reading newspaper. It doesn't play video, for a start. I'm on a roll now. So you can't use it to watch. It doesn't have Flash, so you can't watch video. It doesn't have a proper keyboard, so you can't use it to do work that you might do on your laptop. It's a sort of a nothing thing.
But Matt, you see, I think that the nervousness or caution, cautiousness everyone has in terms of Rupert Murdoch and the paywall is that so many times in the past he's been a pioneer who's gone out there and more times than not,
so people think he must be
got
right.
It right. Well, that's my reading of it. I'm not a newspaper person.
Well,
but
I think he sounds like King Canute in terms of the internet. But in terms of paying for content or paying for newspaper content, then there are a lot of people, and I'm slightly one of those who hopes that there's something in this. It's easy to laugh at him, but I've actually been trying out what you have to understand is
that you signed up for Times Plus?
I've been doing it for a year, having it home delivered to my house.
You're on commission, Maggie, because I've been on the pod with you before when you've mentioned this.
I'm just saying I did it as an experiment, and despite all of the bad weather, there's only been 2 days when the paper hasn't arrived.
Yeah, but we're talking about the subscription
now.
This is different.
Can I just say, but that's what he's actually doing is he's almost, whatever you think about him, he's creating almost like a Sky system for the Times newspaper. So I now hear that I won't have to pay £2 for online Times content because I'm already buying the paper every day. That has answered the John Humphreys point about why is it that some people pay a pound, say, for The Guardian, but they can read it for free. Well, he's slightly turned it around the other way, or this system has turned it around the other way. As for, though, regarding internet-borne information as kind of like, you know, the kind of this terrible, disastrous force, I don't see that. But I do see there may be ways for modest charging, not massive charging. And the other point is that this is being launched just at the point of the election. That's when you're being asked to sample the Times. I don't know what tricks they're going to do. But it is possible that out of this, something of a premium service could emerge, or at least a mini pay service. I don't know how it's going to pan out. That's why I'm participating. I find it very interesting to watch, actually.
Well, in this speech, Murdoch was talking about paywalls, and he explicitly admitted that it's not going to work unless every newspaper does it. Now, every newspaper isn't going to do it, and even if every newspaper did do it, somebody else would start up and do it for free.
Well, it's not just newspapers, is it? It's any news service, and
And Sky News is still free.
We've been here before. Yeah. You've got Sky, you've got CNN, you've got the BBC, all online, all offering news services.
Where we don't understand quite what the outcome is going to be is this: the Sky and the BBC are required to be impartial. So they can't, in a way, develop a personality. They can't form this sense of being part of a community. Now, this is where I think...
Times, of course, is full of personality, isn't it?
Well, I'm not saying it is. What I am saying, and I said earlier in this podcast, that the election, for example, has huge possibilities for The Guardian because of where our values and how we position ourselves. It's that kind of sense of community, of having very good writers, columnists, analysts, things you can't get elsewhere. I would be interested to see if this sense that the Financial Times and the Economist and the financial papers can charge and get away with it. What I want to see is whether people running other types of publications, but with a very strong personality, with real points of view, whether that actually is something people will want to join in. And, you know, were we to offer it? I'm not saying we are, but because I don't run the papers. But do you see what I'm trying to say?
Well, I'm personally very glad that they're putting up a paywall at the Times because it means there's absolutely no chance of stumbling accidentally on Jeremy Clarkson online. So that's good. Were you going to pay, Steve, will you pay £1 a day for the Times? No, you won't, will you?
No, I won't. But I think, Matt, it's about point of consumption. The reason you're prepared to pay for a newspaper is because there's nothing else you can consume in that space. Yeah. I know that's slightly changed recently with absence.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the point is you get on a train and you want something to read, you've got to buy a newspaper. The difficulty for the Times in terms of the paywall is if I'm at my desk, there's other sources I've got.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
But I do take your point, Maggie, about the community. And I think what it really boils down to, obviously, is percentages. What small percentage do they need to convert to paying to make it worthwhile? Because clearly it's not going to need to be a lot of people in terms of everyone who's currently coming to the site. But what's the tipping point in terms of percentage?
My worry would be on the Times that we don't know what the Telegraph is going to do, for example, but a lot of the people who actually are really attached to a newspaper are probably the older generation of newspaper readers who would probably not particularly care one way or another whether they read it online because they read it at home over their breakfast.
I'm sure we'll have plenty more opportunities to talk about all of this on future editions of the podcast, but we'll leave that there. There's more Murdoch Madness on the New Media Talk USA with Jeff Jarvis, which is coming to iTunes and our website very soon. Now, let's just wrap up this week with a quick word about the shortlist of the radio industry's Sony Awards. Amazingly, Nick Ferrari of the, you know, the corpulent Nick Ferrari of LBC, he's got five nominations. How did that happen, Steve?
Well, actually, I'm going to defend Nick Ferrari because I think he's
a record five.
I think he's a terrific broadcaster, and his show,
his show is
compelling listening because it is complete Marmite.
Yeah, well, okay, he's got that. Absolute Radio has got 11 awards. Well, he's up for 11 awards, I should say, and Six Music, is contesting six categories in what could probably be its final year. It's like when they nominated Planet Rock. Isn't it? It's the sympathy vote.
Can I just say, Matt, I had a look at various websites this morning and I was really amused about how...
Doing your research.
Well, I was a little bit and I was very amused about how the awards were reported because it was absolute per stereotype. So on the Guardian's website, it was all about Six Music.
Yeah.
On the BBC's website, it was all about general BBC stations with no reference or a minor reference to Absolute Radio. And actually, Absolute have just picked up, I think, the most nominations a commercial station's ever had in 1 year. So it's a fantastic achievement for them. But the best one was on the Daily Mail's website, Wogan snubbed by Radio Academy Awards.
Excellent. Well, we can't. We've managed to go about 2.5 minutes without mentioning the fact that Media Talk has been. We have been nominated.
Fantastic.
You and all of us. It's great.
Well done.
So that's
well
very
done
good.
To us.
So excellent. We'll probably lose again because we're also. Do you know what? We're up against bloody Hackney Podcast, which is Fran, who's one of our producers here, does in her spare time. When most of us go away from work and do something different, she goes away from work and does more of the same. So she's up for best internet program with that, which will probably win. Anyway, I should also say that the number of categories has been cut down this year, which is very exciting. So there are a mere 35 to get through. So it'll be all over in a jiffy. Who's hosting it this year? Do we know?
Chris Evans.
Excellent. Away from the radio, we should very quickly talk about TV because we did mention it in the intro. Doctor Who. Who watched Doctor Who?
Oh, yes. I did, yes.
You did? Yes. So what did we think? Matt Smith?
Well, actually, I went to the premiere down in Cardiff as well.
Did you?
Yes, I think they've successfully got Matt Smith and, you know, Karen Gillan away. I think the real problem with Doctor Who is that the special effects require ever more money. Mm. And this is a programme a bit like Strictly Come Dancing that is under the cosh of BBC cuts. They're able to make up some of their budget with money from overseas sales through worldwide involvement. But I actually find the special effects getting more and more hackneyed. I don't know if you watched the bit, the kind of thing over the village green, and it looked like a cross between a Christmas decoration and a sort of, you know, this was the force in the sky,
yeah,
Christmas decoration, and a static firework, yes. And then there was the eye that looked like a python to me. I mean, I think that that's the real problem with it. It's potentially not scary enough. One of the jokes down on the set was that they were going to have invisible special effects because they're so expensive.
Well, I was with a real viewing panel because my children are 6, 8 and 10.
Yeah.
They all absolutely love it and they gave it a big, big thumbs up. And I think the other thing about the cost is, don't forget, this is a big merchandising thing for the BBC as well. The amount of stuff in toy shops related to Doctor Who is huge.
And Matt Smith is great fun, isn't he?
I thought he was
bloody
terrific.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes, really, really good. And unexpectedly good, I think. Yeah. You know, because everyone says he looked a bit silly and looked a bit funny in the advanced publicity. But actually, I think he got the tone absolutely right. People thought he might be too young, but he didn't feel too young.
I think the challenges or the successes, he's immediately carved his own personality.
Yeah. Well, it's that tweed suit, isn't it? So there we are. MasterChef, I watched last night, but nobody will have watched because it was on against the football, so you wouldn't have watched
it. I was
it.
Watching the football.
So you watched the football. And
I didn't watch. I had so much MasterChef last year that this year I just thought, I can't watch any more towers of food being
constructed. That's the way I feel about MasterChef, actually.
Too much towers of food.
MasterChef just feels like it's never off air at the moment.
Yes. It's a bit like University Challenge. Is it just me then? You want to talk about the... it was a great final of University Challenge this week. Really, very exciting. Nobody... Do you not watch it?
No, I'm afraid I didn't. No, I've had a bit of a strange week because I was in Digital Switchover Wales.
Yes,
I did mean to make a joke about
Wales having...
Well, it has actually switched over, which is... I mean, so therefore you could actually watch Channel 4 on preview, you know,
instead of the Welsh. Yes.
It was all very exciting. I did actually, though, watch The Pacific, so I had the DVDs, which is the Sky movies extravaganza. Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks have done this 10-part...
Band of Brothers remake.
It's Band of Brothers. And it's... It's a magnificent series. You're quite wrong, Matt. You're very prejudiced about these sorts of things.
Am I?
I must say, it's just a magnificent series. I would recommend it.
Well, the intellect gap between us, Maggie, is exemplified by the fact that I got excited last night by trialling out a 3D TV and seeing a clip of football in 3D TV.
I went to see Alice in Wonderland and watched it with a glass of dreadful film. I was really, really disappointed.
Yeah, it is disappointing. Yeah,
I like the 3D. It's funny turning around when you're in a 3D cinema and seeing everybody with their glasses. That's quite funny. What's the TV experience like?
It was stunning. It really was. I mean, it's as you would expect, having gone through the cinema experience. I mean, I only saw a few minutes.
And amazingly, when you wear your 3D glasses, man, you won.
Well, that would have been a worse result if that had happened. I'm fairly happy on that front. But it really was a fantastic experience.
Ooh, excellent. Well, will you be investing? It's going to be quite expensive, isn't it? But £1,500, something like that?
I think I'll wait until the price comes down.
Thank you, mate. Okay, or until Sky give you a complimentary one. Yeah. With that, we'll call it a day. Thank you very much to Steve Ackerman, who is from Something Else, and to Maggie Brown, who is from Media Guardian, for your various bits of wit and wisdom this week. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.